Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:40, and that is Pacific Standard Time, and today is January 11th, and there is a lot of things to cover today. First, let's kick off with the bond market. There was news today that there was robust demand for US Treasuries at their most recent auction, and it is that kind of news that helps to at least suggest that there is somebody in there buying the dips. But I thought the TIPS chart, which is the inflation-protected securities issued by the Treasury, are at an interesting juncture right now. The yield has been largely range-bound between just about 0 and 3/4% for the last almost 4 years, or at least 3.5 years, and the yield got right up to the upper side of that range in December and has been pulling back for the last 3 weeks. It is now mid-range. It's in the region of the trend mean. The trend mean has turned upwards. If it is going to encounter support or prices encounter resistance, then this would be an area in which that might happen. What we have certainly seen is that there was a certain tendency among investors to begin to price in inflation in the latter half of the year. Most particularly following the presidential election in the US. Some of that was taken off the table in the last 3 or 4 weeks. We're still only a couple of weeks, or at least we're only 9 days ahead of the presidential inauguration. And it is as yet pretty woolly as to exactly what it is that Mr. Trump has got planned in terms of his stimulus. There hasn't been any real substantive effort to tell us exactly what it is he's going to do. And I guess part of the reason for that is because they're still going through the process of getting the cabinet sworn in and vetted, but it is also because of this continued media flurry around the very real possibility that Russia was attempting to influence the US presidential election. And of course, as the victor, then that can be seen as an attack on the credibility of Mr. Trump's presidency. So obviously, that is what is front and center at present. But what it does also suggest is that now that we are approaching the inauguration, that we do not need to start seeing some very clear plans for what is likely in the first 100 days, and whether he is in fact going to be able to comply with the rules with how to get rid of his businesses. When we look at what exactly is going on out there, today was a rather volatile day because of some of these factors in the currency markets, and the euro, having been well into the 104s, closed out the day closer to 106. That is quite a lot of volatility. But perhaps more importantly, it is the longest tail, downside tail on a candle, or tail on the lower side of a candle that we've seen since at least the beginning of December. Would suggest that there are people willing to bet that the euro is going to strengthen from here. The pound as well. We have seen some increasing discussion exactly what are the ramifications of the UK leaving and a hard Brexit and simply cutting its ties entirely with the EU. So that was what helped to propel the currency lower, and yet there is quite clear support in the region of 120. There is also this nagging argument about the US dollar, and just exactly what it is that the bullish case for the dollar over the last 7 weeks has been predicated on three different factors, and those factors can loosely be defined as a fiscal stimulus, a bout of deregulation for the banking sector, and lower corporate profits. And they are still what the market really wants to see, but we haven't really got any idea just yet exactly what it is that they are, how those are going to be manifested in the new administration. And I think that that suggests that there is room for the dollar to ease somewhat, not least because it is still really quite overextended relative to the trend mean against a substantial number of currencies. And that is most particularly the case against the yen. And the yen was a little bit firmer in here today, and it does look increasingly likely that this is at least a pause in consolidation. And quite often, with a pause after a big move like this, then the reversion to the mean can pick up pace in the latter stages of that reversion. That you often get prices just moving in an inert fashion, people lose patience, and then you get the reversion to the mean all happening at once. With a somewhat firmer tone on the euro, but really only in the very latter stages of the day, that took some of the luster off of the rally that we had in the majority of European stock markets. But what we have seen is that the DAX did move to a new recovery high, but it is a bit overbought in the short term. And most particularly, the FTSE 100 has been up on consecutive days and is breaking now to new all-time highs. And this is a 16-year range that we are now seeing being completed and resolved on the upside. And I think tomorrow what I will do is a review of the FTSE 100 and some of the better performing shares within it that are leading this advance, because this is a very important breakout. And not least because the FTSE is packed full of global corporate autonomies, and that also helps to explain why it is breaking upwards because of global growth, and not least also because of the relative weakness of the pound against a background of improving global growth. One of the stock markets that really did clearly stand out today was South Korea, and it has been ranging for a prolonged period, but this is the highest closing price that we've seen in at least a year, and this has been a very inert and but inert environment relative to the previous uptrend. But there's been quite a lot of volatility if when we look at it just over the short term. Nonetheless, 1800 to 2100 is really only a reasonably tight range, and if it can sustain a move up out of this range, well, then we can conclude that South Korea is back in a demand-dominated environment, and the relative performance of Samsung is certainly helping to pull this market up and out of this range. It isn't, of course, just Samsung. It is a pretty broad-based rally. When we look at POSCO, for example, it has very clear commonality with the resources sector and with the materials sector overall. I'm just kind of pulling up that chart. Then when we look at the basic resources sector, and you can see very clearly that there is a clear upper dynamic for POSCO in here today from the region of the 200-day moving average. When we look at the BlackRock World Mining Trust, then that is loaded with shares like BHP and Rio, and that moved to a new recovery high today. The South African stock market, which is rather heavily skewed towards those mining companies, is rallying from the 50,000 area. It has been, and of course, this is in nominal. This is a nominal price index, of course. It doesn't really cater to the fact that the rand had been so very weak over the last few years, but nonetheless, the rand is now trading below its trend mean, or excuse me, the dollar is trading below its trend mean against the rand, and the dollar really would need to sustain a move above 14 and a quarter to indicate that this isn't a period of greater stability overall for the rand. And this was also an interesting day in Brazil because they cut the target rate, and that suggests that having really have gone through a very prolonged period of raising rates up to over 13%, that the Bank of Brazil is now at a point where inflation is beginning to be brought under control and they can start to cut rates to reignite economic growth. The very clear outperformance of the US dollar between 2014 and the latter stages of 2015 was perhaps the greatest period of distress for the economy, and now we are in a more stable environment. And the fact that commodity prices are doing better, and that the continuous commodity index, which is unweighted, has now rallied to break the short-term progression of lower rally highs that's been there since the middle of last year, that's really very encouraging indeed. It suggests that there is ample potential for additional upside in the commodity complex for the remainder of the year. Today also was an interesting day in the uranium sector. What we are starting to see is that some of the very large producers like Kazakhstan are pulling back and cutting supply. And if a very low-cost producer like Kazakhstan is cutting its supply, well, then what does that mean for marginal suppliers? They must really be in trouble. And what we're certainly seeing is that this has been a substantial rally in the uranium price from very depressed levels, and we can probably conclude that they are uneconomic levels. When we look at uranium miners, there is a great deal of commonality. Areva has just had its bailout from the French government approved, and I am looking at these with too much history, so I'm just going to bring that those charts down to 5 years. So Areva is bouncing. Bannerman Resources is breaking up out of a base formation, or at least appears to be in the process of doing so. Bayswater Uranium has already done that out of Canada. Cameco is by far the largest of the listed uranium companies and is now pulling away from the trend mean. This is a very clearly a recovery candidate. And if we scroll very clearly through them, we can see ample evidence of base formation completion and a return to demand dominance. And it isn't a factor of where they're listed, what currency they're listed in, but it is just about every share that is related to the uranium sector is moving to position of outperformance. And where that is not the case, then this is not the time to be looking at laggards. This is certainly more of a time to be betting on the quick, clear leaders in a sector, because if you've got such commonality coming off of very depressed levels and a share is not participating in that, well, then that means that there are clear problems. There are problems that are holding it back. And betting on something like Paladin Energy when everything else is doing well and Paladin is still tracking its lows would suggest that they may not be able to resolve their debt issues. And of course, the shipping industry is really where we have very large debt issues, where there is ample evidence of companies that are in severe trouble. And it is so bad that the Bloomberg Dry Ships Index is no longer updated. They no longer compile the index because nobody was interested in it. But when, for example, we look at Diana Shipping, there is evidence that it is potentially now forming a first step above that year-long base. It hasn't quite broken out just yet. Maersk has been outperforming and is the clear outperformer within the sector. But when we look at when I think a lot of people will be looking at what is it that is depressed, what is could be still considered cheap, then uranium is certainly a candidate, but so are the shipping companies. And a substantial number of these companies are trading below book. And considering just how expensive it is to to buy these ships. Obviously, there must be an awful lot of outstanding debt, but you know, the shipping industry has got a long history of, I guess, writing off these debts, and stronger, better capitalized companies coming in and swooping up these assets at very low prices indeed. And I think that that 2017 is a year in which that could indeed happen for the shipping index. This was also a very interesting day, because what we are starting to see is that Illumina, and I did a review of some of the more promising biotechnology companies earlier this week, but Illumina has now quite clearly formed a failed downside break that greatly enhances the potential that it is going to get back up and test that $180 area. But the story of why it is doing that is much more important. It is very much related to the new architecture for genetic sequencing machines that it has released. And what has happened in genetic sequencing is a multiple in terms of the speed with which innovation is occurring. It makes Moore's Law look positively slow. It cost $100 million to sequence the first genome in 2001. It cost $1,000 last year. Within the next few years, it will cost $100. By 2030, it will probably be free, and we will likely be charged for services relating to our individual genetics rather than simply paying to have them sequenced. The technology is improving rapidly, and it is a very clear example of where a tool has been developed that is going to, I think, at least, it is going to act as a catalyst for further innovation within the sector, because the declining cost of sequencing DNA means that the experimentation with DNA can accelerate. And when we have the confluence of innovation, and I think this is by far the most important fact, it is not simply that we are living in an age where we're getting a technological innovation in one particular sector, but that it is a confluence of innovations in multiple sectors that is helping to drive productivity growth. And productivity growth in healthcare or energy has real economic benefits, because they are necessary spending rather than discretionary spending. We have to spend money on our healthcare. We have to spend money on energy. And the rapidly declining cost of genetic sequencing, coupled with CRISPR editing technology, coupled with deep learning in and artificial intelligence in the and cloud computing in other sectors, is going to combine to create very, very quick innovation within the healthcare sector. And it is interesting that the Nasdaq Biotech Index, and I'm not at all sure that this is representative of the influence that genetics is likely to have. I need to do more research on this, but it has had a big pullback, and it has been largely range bound for a year. It does need to get back above 3,000, but it is looking quite a bit different to the S&P 500 Healthcare Index. That has lost momentum, and it has not pulled back in a very violent way. What happens next, I think, is going to be very, very interesting indeed, because the cost of genetic sequencing is collapsing, the cost of producing new drugs is expanding at an exponential rate, and those are diametrically opposed trends. It is going to be much cheaper in future to develop customized solutions than broad spectrum solutions, and the pharmaceuticals industry, such as it is currently structured, is not particularly well suited to that. So there are going to be very clear winners and losers within this sector. And I think with that, I'm going to leave you for today. I'm going to wish all the best to all of you.